Hi, everyone. Before we get started with today's episode, I need to address some recent news. And also, I want to issue a trigger warning for the next minute or two. I'm going to be talking about sexual assault. So, if that's trigger for you, fast forward a minute or two until we get to the start of the episode. So, at the end of February 2020, a woman came forward with the story that alleged that Timothy Hutton raped her shortly after he became famous. I don't want to go into the details here, but the story was originally published on BuzzFeed News. So if you want to read the full account, you can go there and find it. What I do want to make clear here is that we here at Let's Go Steal a Podcast believe the victim and we stand with her. I've discussed this issue with my other co-host, and we honestly did consider just stopping the podcast altogether. But we have, at this moment in time, anyways, decided to move forward. The fact is, we were fans of the show before these allegations broke. We're going to do our best to separate the character of Nate Ford from the actor who played him. And as always, we're going to apply a critical eye to what the show is saying in every instance, just the way that I feel that we have for the past three seasons of the show. But as this story develops, we might need to change this approach. So, and I'll keep you updated if we decide to do something different. And as always, I welcome your thoughts on how we should handle this going forward. Thank you, and let's move on to this episode of Let's Go Steal a Podcast. Welcome back, everybody. Today we're going to be talking about the French Connection job, and Robin is here with me.
Hello, everyone.
Robin's excited because this is an Elliot-heavy episode, and there is a connection to her favorite video game franchise.
Yes.
I like to say, just favorite video game.
Connection in the French Connection job.
It's all connected. So the French Connection job aired on August 12th, 2012. It was written by Paul Guyot, and the director is Tanya McKiernan, who is the daughter of Stephen J. Cannell, who, if you saw it on the end title card of a television show, you'd be like, oh yeah, but he was like a super prolific American television producer and writer and novelist and occasional actor. Like he showed up in, like, in Castle, whenever he would have his poker game with the other crime writers.
Yeah.
Like James Patterson stuff. He was one of the guys.
Oh, okay.
He's the All guy right. who like at the end of shows had like the typewriter and he like pulls the paper off the typewriter from like older. Yeah.
So like, I wouldn't, gun to my head, would not have been able to tell you his name.
Me neither. Me
But
neither.
yep.
But yeah, no, he created the Rockford Files. So you know, Chris Downey and John Rogers were like, yes, my king. He also created the A-Team, The Greatest American Hero, 21 Jump Street, and The Commish.
Whoa, that is a resume.
Uh-huh. Yeah. You know, along with like actually acting and things. And, you know, he worked on Columbo and tons of other things. So he also did a series of novels, the Shane Scully books.
I'm not familiar.
I don't know those, but that was a thing. So I think that's really cool. She has pedigree, Tanya McKiernan. And so in this episode, Elliot goes undercover at a culinary academy or culinary art school to take down an avaricious restaurateur, which is what IMDb says. And I love all two of the SAT words in that. But we also have like some great guest stars. One of them is the reason that you're really excited about this episode.
Yeah.
And right. And
like, let's just dive right in because he's like the first person that we see.
He is.
So we have our villain, whose name is David Lampard, played by Steve Valentine, which is an amazing name.
So first of all, Steve Valentine is a great villain name. And I wish they could have just kept that for him. So Steve Valentine he's very recognizable and he's had a really long career. So he was on Crossing Jordan for a long time, which I never watched, but some people really, really love it. But he also voiced Alistair in Dragon Age Origins, which is my all-time favorite game of all time. Love it a lot. Have played it in the double digits of times, and Alistair is great. And so I was really happy that he was on here, and he doesn't quite sound like his character in it, but he sounds just enough like him that as I was watching it, like way back when, I was like, this guy sounds so familiar. Like, who is he? What? And then like, oh my gosh, he's Alistair and he's evil.
And I like that he didn't do the Alistair voice, because I think that would have really been upsetting.
Yeah, it doesn't. He's done a fair amount of voice work, and he does mix it up a little bit, but he doesn't really look anything. Like, the character of Alistair is this like hunky blonde 19-year-old.
Alistair is a himbo in the best possible way.
Yeah.
And Steve Valentine does not exude himbo energy at all.
Very skinny and 6'4", and he has like fox energy.
He looks like
heart-shaped face.
Yeah. Do you remember the Bailey School Kids books?
No.
But like, it was so great because they came up on Twitter yesterday. So they're a series of books, and it's about these like very normcore kids who are convinced that they're the adults around them are different mythological cryptids or whatever. So there's like sea monsters don't ride motorcycles, vampires don't wear polka dots. But I'm gonna have to send you a picture. Their principal in one of them, they think he's a vampire, and he looks like Steve Valentine.
Steve Valentine kind of looks like a vampire.
He does.
And not at all in like a judgmental way, but he has like a widow's peak, mm-hmm. and like very high, sharp cheekbones and a very pointy chin.
Yeah.
And oozes villainy in this role, which we will talk about when we actually get into the episode. But like, it boggles my mind because Alistair is like he's a little cinnamon roll, and he's like square jawed and like always in a big suit of armor. And
he has like a boy band haircut.
I think I just blew out your speakers there. I'm sorry. But it's really, I don't know. I feel like if you haven't ever played Dragon Age, you should. If you like any sort of RPG, you should just play it. But if not, you should go on to YouTube and look up like Alistair Dragon Age and just see what he looks like, and then look up Steve Valentine, because it's mind-boggling that they are the same person. And I love Alistair as much as I despise the villain in this episode, because I do think he's Alistair's side. This is one of the better villains they've.
Yeah. And I like his crime.
He's got a lot of character, which
he does.
Sometimes they're just like evil, and he's got like layers.
Because, you know, as they always say, like, they have to use your weakness. They use their weaknesses to take them down, and they very much do in this one.
Like, oh, he's greedy and a little racist and kind of stupid. Ooh, so many layers. All right, yeah. So let's talk about actual leverage.
Oh my gosh,
sorry. So that's why I wanted to be on this episode, so I can talk about everything except this episode. So we're going to start with
Steve
Valentine, our villain.
Yes.
In a kitchen.
That's right, David Lampard. And I really like that this this shady French man is like, I would rather be doing this deal in a back alley somewhere. And Lampard's like, you watch way too many movies.
No, it's the other way around. Lampard says he wants to do it in a back alley. He wants to be in the back alley. Yeah. And the French guy says you watch too many movies.
You know what? You're right. And I don't ever want to throw them under a bus because I love them so much, but the transcript on leverage.whendarknessisnet, whendarknessfalls.net has it flipped.
Maybe they changed it on the day when they were filming. Maybe this is based on the shooting script and they were like, hold on, this makes more sense. Because thematically that comes back later.
Yeah.
Because when he does the deal with Nate, they're in a parking garage. And I was like, why are you doing this in like a gross old parking garage? And then I was like, oh, right. Because he wants the
movie, the cinematic-ness of it. Okay. So yes, it's flipped. But then he also says that he's out because this price point is too high. And they appear to be
for this mysterious deal.
Yes. Obviously drugs. Come on. But then our client, who we'll meet for real in a minute, comes in and starts yelling at Lampard, as if he can't tell that he's in the middle of a covert business deal, about him banning students from his school. And the guy who he's buying from just keeps talking. Like, dude, this is incriminating. There's a witness here. And they Toby sees and he's like, you're not gonna get away with this. But Lampard's like, that's cool, we'll just beat you up real bad.
Yeah.
So the beating of Toby is so bad, and it happens off camera, that Lampard winces. He's like, ooh. Like, to me that seems like really bad.
It's pretty bad.
Villain. Yeah. Is like, oh man, okay. But when we meet them again at the brew pub, he's like, look, my body's gonna heal, but I'm worried about the kids. So he, I guess at the culinary school, he had like they allowed in like foster kids and like kids who like weren't gonna be able to afford to go to college, or like, you know, he was training them. Yeah. To have an actual future, because a lot of them also had arrest records and things like that. And they were going to open a restaurant at the school to give them job opportunities. And this guy just sounds like a saint. Like, he just sounds wonderful.
It sounds like a really good setup. And he delivers this exposition very quickly. And it's to Elliot and Nate sitting at the table with him. And he's still, like, very beaten up. Like, this has happened. He may have left the restaurant and come straight to the brew pub.
Yeah. I'm surprised Elliot didn't like have a steak for his eye or something. I feel like that would be on point for Elliot. And they talk about how evil Lampard is, that he's pushing these kids out who have no place else to go, just so he can jack up the tuition prices and get people who can afford to pay $30,000 to go to this culinary school, which is a lot of money for culinary school.
Yeah. I mean, although I did think like, wow, this was almost a decade ago that this was filmed, wasn't it? Cause I feel like $30,000 a year right now is kind of what things cost.
Yikes. I want to like look up a culinary school in Houston and see what it's going for. And he says he's charging 30 grand and he's promising people that they're going to be like the next rock star chef or something. But he also thinks that he's dealing drugs based on what it looked like, and that the price that they were selling for was $12,000 a kilo, which is a lot. And Elliot thinks, you know, immediately that it's cocaine, because that's sort of the market price for cocaine, apparently.
Well, he seems to know. It comes back a couple of times throughout the episode that he just like knows the cost of street drugs throughout the world, which I guess maybe there's like a Hitter newsletter or something of like professional development resources. Yeah. Or just like a quarterly thing of like, what's new in the Hitter world?
He just takes a webinar.
The new stats
so often.
For Q2 are out.
Yeah. Well, I think I've only seen the first episode or two of Christian Kane's other show,
Burnout Paradise.
Yeah. And he knows also a lot about drugs in that one because he was a DEA agent.
Oh, okay.
I was like, oh, he was just getting ready for his role in 10 yeah. years, you know. So Nate kind of takes Elliot aside and he's like, you know, these are drugs. Like, we should probably just go to the police, which I don't know if Nate has ever said before.
I feel like sometimes he asks and says, like, well, why didn't you go to the police? Mm-hmm. Like, he asks the clients that, but it's like to get a fuller picture of what the problem is. But yeah, yeah. I don't think he's ever
just said we should go to the police.
No, not unless it's like a setup for later so that the bad guy gets arrested. But yeah, right. No, this is a first.
Yeah. And I wonder if, because it's happened a couple times so far in this season, that Nate is kind of setting them up to answer or to like prompt an answer out of them.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that's sort of what he was doing here. But we find out that Elliot and this guy have a history that he taught him how to use a knife. And Nate's like, oh, and he's like, no, like, not like that. Like, to cook. And it's this like really lovely story when he got out of the service and he was just messed up from the service. And he was working, or he was like at a, yeah, he was working, like they were reconning a restaurant in Belgium. And I guess he was supposed to kill him. I should have closed him out. I should have been in and out in under 90 seconds.
I thought that he was just supposed to go in and check out the restaurant.
Yeah. Well, it says and we were reconning this restaurant in Belgium and I should have closed him out. I should have been in and out in under 90 seconds.
Oh.
But I ended up talking to him for 3 hours. And then he showed me that I could use my knife to create instead of destroy. And we know that Elliot first was introduced to cooking because of a flashback to a home ec class in high school.
Yeah, but it was a really gross flashback and I'd like to pretend like that didn't happen.
I also like that this story has erased that. And yeah, so he just like abandons whatever job he was doing and sticks around for several months and just shadows Toby and learns everything he could about the art of food. And in a couple months, he becomes an amazing chef.
I think that if you're dedicated, you can become an amazing chef in a couple months.
Yeah. Especially if you already know
how to cook. You learn your knife skills. You learn the 5 mother sauces. You're good.
Yeah. And then he obviously hasn't stopped learning since then. So it's not like he was like, I'm perfect. But he, you know, he says he was one of the guys that kept me from falling all the way down. And I think that's, and then he says, so now I'm asking the other guy to understand why I'm going to help him. So he's not saying I want you to, like, I'm asking you to help. He's saying, I want you to understand why I'm going to help, like whether or not you are, but I'm assuming you're going to help me.
Yeah. I thought that was an interesting parallel, whether it was intentional or not, to when Parker went to help Archie, where like her mentor from her past also asked her for help. And like, she just went and did it and didn't think to talk to Nate first to see if Nate would even be interested in helping. Where Elliot presumably could have just got off and dealt with this without going to Nate and the team. But like, he went, I just feel like it's an interesting showcase of like how Elliot and Parker are on really similar journeys, but he's much further along than she is.
Mm-hmm.
Just because like he was further along when the show started, even. Yeah. And I know John Rogers has talked about that before on his blog a lot, that like Elliot's redemption story happened before this show really started, where like Parker and Hardison's hadn't.
Yeah. And, you know, I think it also really speaks to their one-to-one relationships with Nate for this kind of scenario, where Parker, he's much more of a father figure for Parker. And we've said it before that Elliot's more of like a brother or like almost equal footing of like not maturity, but like, you know, yeah, I guess maturity level with Nate.
Well, it rarely feels like Nate is teaching Elliot something. Like, Elliot feels like a professional that Nate is, like, consulting with often. Mm-hmm. Not always, but it almost feels like you could be outsourcing that job to just, like, any hitter that is good at their job would fit those role and cons where, like, I don't know, that doesn't make, I didn't explain that well, but he feels like, yeah, more of a peer or, like, a coworker.
Yeah. Yeah, I think peer is, like, the right, like, an equal.
Yeah.
And as
like a manager from another department that you bring in to like work.
Exactly. He has another equal set, like skill set.
Nate is the head of
reference. That's just as broad. And he's
the head of acquisitions.
There we go. Yes.
All of the other hosts who are librarians are like laughing at that joke.
So now we're done with the second seat. An hour and a half later.
Wait, can I say one other thing about this?
Yes.
That the client's name is Toby Heath, which is a real tough name.
Toby Heath?
Yeah. They say it one time in the show. It's That's Toby amazing. Heath. And I heard it and I was like, wait, what? Because I'm going to bring up the other names that come up later. And they kill it later in the episode with names. But like,
oh, yes.
Toby Heath. What the F? Like, what is that? Should have been a cowboy hipping out for, like, at least 20 years.
In the last episode, the character that Elliot was playing, like, his grifter persona, was based on a friend of his who was the bassist for Toby Keith.
Okay, I guess. It just feels like, being like, hi, this is my best friend, Lenny Chesney. Some things are just... Jim McGraw.
This is my friend, Shania Crane.
Right? Although that's a real good name for a bird.
That is a really good name.
All right.
This is Polly Darden and...
I just felt like it was really important to draw attention to the fact that one name in this was pretty tough. But let's move on to the third scene.
Okay, so inside Leverage headquarters, Parker is like kind of listlessly looking through a book. And Hardison, observant guy that he is like, hey, you seem like you've been down lately. Like, what's going on? You can talk to me. And she's about to open up. Parker says the words, I feel. And then he gets distracted because he has a delivery. And I'm like, Parker just said the words, I feel. Everything needs to stop.
Hardison so we can do in this episode is just not a good, it's he's not being his best and truest self.
He really is not. He's being funny. And that showed up in the Kung Fu Monkey blog, like when John Rogers is answering questions, they're like, why was he like this? Because this bit in the second where he refuses to tip, they're like, why? Everybody else has this amazing growth in this episode. And he was like, you know, he was just being funny. And the tipping bit actually came from the writer's room, a conversation that they were having. And we can talk about that in a second. But he was like, also, it's a five-hander. Not everybody's going to be great in every episode. Like, okay. But yeah, the tipping thing, especially that it comes back. They were having like a debate over how you tip. And I love, like, John Rogers is just a genuinely good guy, I think. He's like, I believe in tipping at the beginning of your service. So he's like, when I go to a bar,
yeah,
I tip after the first drink and I tip $20. And so that way the bartender's like, oh, I'm going to keep an eye out for that guy when he needs another drink. And I'm like, is this because you are an alcoholic, John Rogers?
That could be.
Yeah. He's like, I'm going to need my next whiskey. But I mean, I'm like,
I believe I've never in even tipping. Heard that. I believe in tipping heavily because especially on cheap meals, like at a diner or something, where if my tab is $10, like I'm leaving a $5, because I figure like that extra $2, I might not notice it and it's not going to make a huge difference overall to them. But like, I've waited tables or attended bar and like getting a really big tip early on in my shift changed like the whole day. Even if it wasn't that much money, it like,
yeah,
knowing that someone tipped like 40% instead of 20 was like, yes.
Yeah. I've gotten a lot more. So yeah. Hardison has gotten a toy and he won't tip the courier. And then he makes fun of him, says he looks like Stanley Tucci, which I think is a compliment. Stanley Tucci is a very handsome man.
And the Vice Passenger does kind of look like Stanley Tucci.
Yeah. And he, that actor was like a friend of somebody on set. I don't remember who. All right. So Sophie's still at the theater, but we're going to start the con. And Hardison brings up the stuff and we talk about David Lampard. He's a former chef. He wanted to be the next Emeril or Mario Batali, but he couldn't cut it in the big kitchens. So now he's an investor and he takes over cooking schools that need help. And then he like ups the tuition and like becomes a loan shark, basically.
He charges them 30% interest on loans.
And then he takes their cars, their homes, whatever, when they can't pay.
So, I will say, this is a villain with, like, he has a lot of revenue streams going. Because he has what we think is, we have drug dealing. We have loan sharkery.
Mm-hmm. We have just buying up these schools and upping the prices. So if you can pay enough, then you're paying
and then he opens a restaurant and needs it to be a success, so presumably he's doing these like flash in the pan style restaurants. I guess maybe you could launder money that way. That might be part of it. It might just be a money laundering
and a lot
thing,
of, but like they had already built this restaurant for the school, but he's like, well, it's already built, I might as well make money out of it.
But most restaurants don't see a profit until after 6 months. I don't know, I feel like you could launder money pretty easily through a restaurant. Like you just say like, well, these were, if it's like a hot new restaurant, like look at all of these bills that for food that no one bought. But yeah, he has a lot of he's diversified, which I think is interesting and not that common for a leverage villain. Often it's like,
unless here's they're a billionaire and they have like, you know, they own a ton of things.
Right. But for the, in terms of like the con, it's like, here is what they're doing and here is how we're going to take them down. And it's the same thing. Mm-hmm. But this guy's got like multiple things and all of them combined to take him down.
Yeah. And multiple reasons why, like, oh, this guy is a bad guy. Like, one, he's probably dealing drugs. Two, he beat up our friend. Three, he's a loan shark. Four, he kicked these poor, like, kids who are high risk, like, who need this place. He kicked them out. Like, he's just all around bad. He's just
not good. He lied and said he's just a Grey Warden when he's actually heir to the throne of Pharrell.
He leads you on, even though you can't be his consort because you are a Dalish elf.
You can't marry him, but you can be his mistress.
It's not enough. I also don't want to be a consort, so that would have been fine.
Oh, yeah.
But I never got to finish that round, so it was okay. So he's been going back and forth to Paris or to France, and which, you know, normally for somebody in the food business isn't too weird, except that he never spent any time in the food world, which in France, that's the only place you can be because they have good food everywhere, but okay. except apparently in the middle of nowhere, under bridges, in back alleys.
Which I guess this is packed as GPS.
Yeah. So Elliot thinks he's buying these drugs wholesale from the French and then shipping them over here. And his accounts are clean, Nate says, which he says makes sense because dealers don't hide their money in accounts. And because apparently they hide it right next to their stash. I guess they keep that stuff liquid. Oh, and this is when they say Toby Heath.
Right?
Like, what, Toby? Come on, guys.
So they're ready to bring Sophie in. And Sophie's at her theater. And I love that they were able to use the theater and the actors at the theater in such, like, it felt like an organic way.
Agreed.
So, like, this is such an interest of Sophie's in this new avenue that she's exploring. And, oh, hey, it actually helps the cons as well. I really like that.
I do have a question about this, though, because mm-hmm. they keep coming back to kind of the joke of, like, the weird, every time you see theater stuff, it's weird. It's, like, some, you know, exercise that's very strange about, like, getting in touch with whatever. And I don't know if the joke is, look at all this weird shit that Sophie has these people doing, or if the joke is, look at all this weird shit that actors do to get ready.
Oh. Like,
right? Like, is the joke on, like, theater companies or on Sophie and how she's approaching a theater company? Because she does seem to turn out good actors.
Mm-hmm.
Like, every time she has to direct someone, the same thing happened in the, like, the Boiler Room job. Like, she ends up getting really good performances out of all those people who aren't actors.
I mean...
Well, but, like, better.
But that was the point, was that they weren't supposed to be really good.
But so I don't know if she... I just wasn't sure. It's funny. It's a good bit. I just didn't know where that...
Yeah, I don't know. I think that's a really good point. I know that there are some schools of acting that are very out there with, like, crawling on the ground and doing all sorts of weird things to get outside of yourself. But I don't know a lot about that. So yeah. I don't... And also, I think that that would be just a funny thing that I think John Rogers would enjoy, like, saying, like, look at these weird things that actors do.
Right.
And you're but watching them. Like, it's very meta.
But they also, like, poke fun at Sophie and her acting skills.
Yeah.
Throughout the show, that, like, she isn't a good actor except when she's doing a con. So is the joke that she's a really bad acting teacher, too? John Rogers, if you secretly listen to this, please tweet it.
Just DM me on Twitter.
yeah. Or if anyone else knows.
Or has a theory, even.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or just answer it in Leverage Season 6.
Yes.
Yeah.
I love that. When, you know, Sophie is accepting an award somewhere.
Oh my God, yes.
Best director or something.
Oh, maybe she has an EGOT because Parker stole one for her. Has stolen
all of them, and then she wins the last one legitimately.
Uh-huh.
Oh, that'd be nice.
So then Parker just keeps it and does her own acceptance speeches.
That would be great. I do love that when Sophie leaves, like, her poor student is like, oh God, did I do it wrong? And she's like, no, I just have these voices in my head. And then she just, like, tells them to take 45 and then she leaves. And she just immediately, like, heads to the culinary school and gets rid of their like, chef teacher by offering him a job working on a show called From Pole to Plate, Cooking with Strippers.
Okay, how is this not a show?
I would watch it.
Yeah. Like, the Great British Clothes Off Bake or something, right? Like, there's a joke there with how every reality show is trying to be the Great British Bake Off and is trying to, like, copy that with varying levels of success. Some of them are great. Some of them are kind of dull. But, like, how has Pornhub not done
The Great American Takeoff, like, come on.
Oh my God, right? Yes. We're like, and it adds a legit level of, like, maybe it's a liability thing because cooking naked is a very stupid idea.
Yes. I assume that they wouldn't be naked when they're doing this. But this is like,
Or like you have an apron and just butts hanging out. butts.
Yeah, I feel like that's a big health concern. Like, that's the health department would shut you down. But this chef is, like, totally down for this, especially when he finds out he has to live with the strippers.
He doesn't even, like, let Sophie finish her sentence. He just grabs the tickets and leaves.
Yeah. I wonder where he ended up.
That's on the question post.
Oh, is it? John
answers it. He says that what they do there is that as soon as they get there, someone, they'll like hire someone to come to the airport to tell him like financing has fallen through. We aren't going to make the show, but go ahead and like, but here's a vacation on us.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Or like,
because I feel like they, either they explained it in the one episode where they take over the car dealership and they send them off to on a cruise or something.
That's the great bit where Sophie's on the earbud and she's like, you guys just won. You're going to Tahiti, Hawaii for a week, 5 days.
Yes. And they're like, is she malfunctioning?
Yeah. They're like, do you know anything about this? No, let's just go. We'll save money if we close our dealership for 5 days. Let's go.
Yeah. So, yeah, so he's out and now Hardison and Elliot are in. Elliot's character doesn't get a name besides Chef, but he routinely refers to Hardison as Hardison and not as an alias during this entire thing. Like in front of other people. And we get to know all the other students in this class. And they said in the commentary that they wanted to, well, one, Al-Taj apparently when he walked in, he saw the young woman who I was like, oh, she's Hillary Banks. Like she's, or not, maybe not Hillary, but the younger sister from Freshman's of Bel-Air.
Yeah.
Not actually her, but playing that archetype. And Alice Hodge was like, the only other Black person in Portland. And I was like, you should put more Black people on your television show, John Rogers.
We should.
Because Portland is very segregated. But they wanted all the characters, like, they wanted you to have a reason to be, I mean, okay with the fact that Elliot was going to be mean to them, but also understand, like, oh yeah, these people have $30,000 to just like drop on this.
Well, and that they aren't serious about cooking.
Yeah.
Like, just because someone has 30 grand to spend on school doesn't mean that they aren't serious about wanting to become a good chef. And so it's, yeah, yeah, that they establish like they don't care at all. Yeah. I did have a great fanfic idea that of Elliot trying to figure out like how this would work and going and taking a class at Sur la Table. I don't know.
Sur la Table.
And just like, if you were just like a random person in that class, and then this like very small, very intense man comes in and is like not paying attention to the food, but paying attention to how they teach the class. Just like what you would think of this guy as you're like, you know, preparing your like Italian dinner for two, like whatever.
And he obviously knows what he's doing because he's like with the knife skills.
Right. Like, what? Sir, this is a strip mall. Like, I'm just here for the discount on the Le Creuset. What is happening?
And he's like, don't worry about it. How did you say that again? Yeah. But I do love all of the little arc, like stereotypes of the people, like the guy who wants to like start a weird vegan restaurant. Not that
only vegan open on the vernal equinox.
Yes, that's it. An organic restaurant only open on the vernal equinox. And Hardison doesn't even know what an equinox is, which is great. And then the woman who's like, I just don't like the way that my husband looks at our housekeeper when she cooks. I'm like, ah.
Lady, you have other problems.
Oh, yeah. The way she was looking at some people in this episode. Maybe everybody has problems in that household. And Chef comes in, Elliot comes in, and that is actually him cutting that celery. Like, he is actually that good with a knife in the kitchen.
I am not that good with a knife. Are you?
No, God, no. I'm terrified. I would cut my finger off. Not terrified. Like, I'm okay with a knife, but I would not go that fast. In the Kung Fu Monkey blog, someone was like, how can you explain how Elliot's so good at all of these things? Like one person can't be this amazing at all these things. And they're like, well, you know, he's like, it's cumulative. Like, he's learning it over time. But also, Christian Kane does all of these things. Like, he does his own stunts. He can sing. He can do this. Like, that's him doing the knife work. Like, he can cook. And he is that charismatic. Because she, or the person ended it with, like, and he's a Casanova. And they're like, and he's like that.
I mean, I guess the other thing is that Elliot isn't young. Like, Elliot isn't in his 20s. He's supposed to be like his mid to late 30s, I think. And so at that point, like, he's had 20 years of adulthood to like learn to do stuff.
Yeah. And again, it's been established he doesn't sleep very much.
Yeah. And you learn things when you're in the army. You have a lot of downtime.
That's right. Just karaoke with the boys. Learn how to play a guitar.
I feel like he should knit. That feels like a thing that he would do.
Didn't we have this on our arts and crafts job?
Yeah, we did.
Fan fiction thing. We decided what it was that he did. And now I can't think of what it was.
Was it macrame? It might have been macrame. Because it was just knots. And we figured he'd be good with knots.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, he could probably pick up just about anything.
Yeah.
I would love to see him embroider.
Yeah. I feel like he would avoid glitter. Yes. He would know better than to go after glitter.
And Hardison doesn't like glitter, we decided, because it can get into electronics. Which is upsetting because Parker really loves glitter. We cannot go back into our arts and crafts thing. I just hope that they listened to that episode that I released and that it's going to be in the show.
The people have spoken, and by people, I mean two of us. Like, we want the crafts job.
Yes. We won't even need producer credits. Just make it. We'll be happy. Yeah, Ellie goes off on like how food is life. Food. Is life. Food is life? What is food?
Food is life.
Food is life.
And they all call him chef.
They all call him chef. And Hardison's freaking out because he found a laser and he's so excited that he's going to fire a laser in the kitchen.
And Elliot is already over it. He's already so like, oh, no. Yeah.
And Parker asks, like, why is Elliot so raw about food? And Nate's like, well, it's his passion. And then Nate also notices that Parker is down and he asks her if she's okay. And she's still distracted. And he asks her how she likes being in Portland. And she's like, it's fine. Hardison and I are fine. Everything with the new leverage is fine. But she doesn't have a thing, she says. Everybody else, you know, Elliot loves food. Sophie loves theater. You have a sicko love of controlling people. And he's like, what? Okay,
he's let's like, not I don't have... No, we'll talk about it. Let's keep talking about you.
Yeah. And he's like, well, what about art? Like, what do you see when you look at Michelangelo's David? And instead of talking about like the art, she talks about how she would get it out, like how she would steal it.
And it's like very thoughtful. Like, she's not glib about it. She's like, well, it has this, and I would need a crane and a chopper.
Mm-hmm. And then he just like goes back to the con. Like, he doesn't really address it, and you kind of see, you know, she knows what she's doing when it comes to her job, and she loves money, but she doesn't have feelings about it, right? Or she's not getting the enjoyment out of it. Other people,
art has value because of the value of it to her. Like, it's not based on what's in the art and what that evokes in her.
Exactly. Back at the culinary school, Elliot has already swept the kitchen twice and hasn't found any drugs. They're very good at hiding them, apparently. And Hardison hasn't either, because he's playing with this gun and levitating food, but just like basically just shooting sound waves at some sugar. So it goes everywhere.
I did wonder,
make some levitating food.
Why did they bring Hardison in at this point? Like, he's not adding any value. Were they just like, oh, it's you search while Elliot distracts them, and then he just bailed on his part of the plan?
Yeah, or they just needed to establish that he was going to need to be in the kitchen later.
Yeah. Well, no, like, I get why the writers did it.
Oh, yeah, but, like...
But, like, I don't get why the, like, why Nate did it.
Well, I think that's the same thing, like, to justify why... Where did this Hardison guy come from? Why is he in the kitchen with us during the opening night of...
But I don't think that they would know yet that he would need to be there.
Oh.
You know what I mean? It's fine. Go down that path.
Yeah.
But...
Yeah.
It just seemed...
I do love that Hardison, when Elliot tells him he will stab him in the neck, says, don't hate the barbecue, hate the sides.
Oh, God. I don't think anything to make him less stabbable, though.
I know. It's real bad today. It's really getting on Elliot's last nerve.
Hardison is normally a really good guy, and everybody has bad days. And everybody really has annoying days. Where they're like, yeah.
And I think Elliot finds it difficult to be open and caring with more than one person at a time. And he's going to be that with Parker in a little bit. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Can't use all the spoons on Hardison.
Well, also, this is an important job to Elliot on a personal level. So having Hardison goofing off during it probably rubs him the wrong way, because it's not just like...
This isn't just a run-of-the-mill job. This is really important to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then that, we were going on with so many tangents. I wonder if, no, because this isn't a show that is like told from a narrator's point of view, like we're seeing everything, but it's almost as if, you know, when you're really in your head about something, it's really important to you. And then anything other people do, like you see it as them not taking it as seriously as you.
Yeah.
So it's like, maybe that's magnified because we are supposed to be seeing Elliot's point of view more. Like, this is super important, and here is Hardison not being 100% paying attention all the time. Yeah. And so it's just magnified as if it was being told through Elliot's lens.
The Rasha job, how they all saw it differently. Yeah, I'll buy that. I'll accept that and then that allows for like why Hardison seems so terrible in the episode, and maybe why Parker seems a little more like introspective. Okay, this is filtered through Elliot's.
Because Elliot understands Parker that way, that most other people don't.
All right.
All right, that's it. It's a Rashomon job thing.
Okay.
I'm going to explain that to everybody else who has this question. Oh, also, when Hardison leaves to like go search, the other guy tries to pick up his levitating gun, and he's like, don't touch my toys. But while Elliot's doing a sweep of one of the walk-in refrigerators, Rampone, who's our Gary Busey, our henchman, comes in and asks him what he's doing in there, and Elliot says, oh, I was looking for some ice. But that's not where you keep ice in the restaurant, apparently. There's a separate place. That was in the trivia on IMDb. I was like, okay, sure.
The ice cover is a pretty bad one.
Like, but Rampone doesn't know that that's not where the ice is. Like, I fully believe he doesn't understand how these work.
Just name a vegetable. Any vegetable would do.
I know.
I'm just what are you looking for? The Rampian, my champion. That's from Into the Woods. If you don't.
Oh my gosh.
Beans. Nothing but beans.
God, I love Into the Woods. But they did later. He goes and he checks on the ice machine, and it is kind of broken. So they really covered their tracks there.
It is no, because it cuts to Hardison then, and he like holds up the part that he took out of the ice machine.
Yeah.
So he did go cover for Elliot.
Yeah. So he was doing his job, just being a little obnoxious while he does it. But Rampone has come not to just be like, you're acting suspicious, but to like bring him to Lampard. And Lampard's like, I want you to be my executive chef for the new restaurant. And Elliot's like, you haven't even tasted my food. So I do like your theory of it being like a laundering scheme. Because if you want your restaurant to be successful, you care about what the food is, because Lampard's like, it doesn't matter. I don't care.
Yeah, he says opening that go perfectly.
Yeah. Which, if you don't know what the menu is, if you don't know what the, what? Because he tells him he can do whatever he wants.
Yeah, I think it's got to be a laundering yeah. deal.
But he does $100 a burger.
They'll pay because they're paying for the sizzle, and he's like, I like your sizzle.
That's gross.
He's like, a whole ninja thing going on, and it's like, oh good, racist too.
Yeah. Just yeah, really, please
like,
don't.
At home, you're gonna, because he's wearing like a headband or something.
Because of the knife skills?
Yeah.
I don't know. Then Leo, the Equinox restaurant guy, has glued stuff to his plate.
Yeah, there's a little flashback.
He's so angry.
If
Lampard, as Lampard's talking to Elliot, Rampone comes back and says, Jean-Luc is here. And as Elliot walks out, he walks by Jean-Luc and his men, and he figures out that it's not drugs that they're dealing, that it's bigger than drugs.
Bigger than cocaine.
It is truffles.
Somehow he doesn't describe as a very distinctive smell at any point.
He does.
Does he say it's a very distinctive smell?
Yeah, because when he was walking by, they had a bag, and he says nothing smells like a French truffle.
Right, but it's not his very distinctive line.
Oh, no, you're right. Oh, no.
Maybe it was too much of a gimme.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Because he only uses it when it's something that everybody else is like, how could you possibly recognize that? That's and a lot true. Of people can recognize the smell. Like, Sophie can recognize the smell of French truffle.
Yeah. Oh. All right.
Yeah. All right. Fair. We'll give it to you, Paul. Yeah. Thank you. And yeah, on the black market, so these are French winter truffles that you can get $5 to $6 grand a pound for them.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's wild. And they are wild. You can't grow them. They just appear. You have to train things. I'm sure everybody knows about truffles.
I did find, so I was trying to read up on truffles, and I think that they've actually figured out a way to grow black truffles, but not white truffles.
They've found some in Australia now, or they've been able to get some to grow in Australia. And they've gone for a lot of money.
There are Oregon truffles that actually are a thing.
Oh, just like they tried to make in this?
They're white truffles. They're not black. Mm. And there are Chinese black truffles that are not as good.
Mm-hmm.
But they get mixed in with, you know, shady truffle dealers will mix them in.
How could they? So
it's exactly the same as the drug dealing. It's just truffle dealing.
Yeah. Which they came up with that when they were going to have it be drugs that they were smuggling through this school. But then Paul Giat's wife was watching an episode of 60 Minutes and they were talking about truffle smuggling. And she's like, you got to watch this. So then they're like, okay, how are we going to like pivot from drugs to truffles? And they were like, no. Paul Giat's like, the whole time it's truffles. And they're like, what? Okay, that's cool. So he's been keeping it in, they're keeping it in that freezer, that walk-in freezer that Elliot was in earlier. Because it was off limits, and in a school, in a cooking school, a fridge being off limits, seems suspicious. So they're going to run a version of the White Van Speakers, is the name of this con.
All right.
Which I don't understand, but it's fine.
Selling someone something they already have, maybe?
White Van Speakers. Yeah. So Sophie's acting students are going to get in on it. And then somebody gives like a loud call and like falls to the stage. She's just so proud because he's made a breakthrough. He's got his authentic place.
Yeah, that's what I wondered. Is this a joke on Sophie or on acting? Hold on.
Yeah. Back at the brewery, Elliot is in the kitchen because he's just been cooking all day for the con. So he's just come home to cook some more. And he tells her that he's going to turn it into a gastropub. And he's like asking her a question. And then she's like, teach me to like stuff. Just kind of out of nowhere. And he's like, I don't have time for this. I got to get this done. I got to go back to the school. I got a lot on my plate. And then it all, I'm sad because it kind of, before they have their moment, it flips back to the classroom where Hardison is showing off that he has printed food and is going to make a gas.
Potato starch paper.
I don't, like, I think it's cool to make science and food, but also I just want to eat food.
It has to be, like, of value. Like, just because you can make something edible doesn't mean that you, like, want to eat it.
Yeah. Like, maybe you could have an application somewhere else, but maybe not in a fancy restaurant. I'm fine. But I like that Whitney, the young rich girl, is like, I don't think Chef Scary Guy is going to like this. And then Nate just walks in and, like, doesn't say anything and, like, picks up some food. And the other woman is, like, making eyes at him, like, oh, hi. And she's like, wow.
Oh, yeah.
Away.
He's in a very, like, ominous suit. Like, there was something about the suit he was wearing where, like, it, I don't know.
They just call him Shifty.
Yeah, and he is. I mean, Nate can be Shifty, like.
Yeah. It's,
he has degrees of Shifty that he can put on when he needs it. But, yeah, that, the one lady.
Hope is her name.
Yeah, the and one who doesn't like how her husband looks at the housekeeper is just, like, really hitting on Nate very hard.
Mm-hmm. And then Rampone comes in, and she's like, oh, Rampone, there's somebody else who's vying for your silver fox.
No, like, she calls him a male cougar.
Male cougar, thank you. I was like, wait, Nate's on,
like,
silver.
It's such a weird, like, a cougar is not a great term, but, like, I'm not defending it, but it specifically refers to, like, an older woman who sleeps with younger men. So, like, male cougar would be an older man who sleeps with younger women. So, like, is she trying to make herself,
so, like, men?
Younger women that, like,
yeah.
But, like, I don't know. It was a weird, it's a weird way of flirting. And I thought it really worked and says a lot about that character, like, very efficiently.
Yeah. I think so too. But I'm like, there's not an equivalent to, like, what would you say? Because you just...
Silver fox is, like...
But that's, like, an actual, like, descriptor of your hair, usually. Yeah. So you couldn't say that for either of those guys.
Just a dude.
Yeah. And I hate that. That's so gendered. Okay.
Yeah,
I know. But then Hardison is like, yeah, man, he was in here looking all kinds of shifty. There's a lot of shifty people around here.
Yeah, and Rampone's like, what do you mean shifty? And he's like you, shifty. Like, come on, man, shifty.
Just dress all in black, shifty. And then he, like, walks off to go find Nate, who's, like, placing cameras on the wall in the walk-in refrigerator. And Lampard finds him, and he's like, who are you? And then we have the greatest name that needs to be in Hitchhiker's Guide. His name is Gar Slavdash. The M is most silent. And I'm like, every time I've watched this episode, I'm like, where is the end? And then it's now that I'm reading the transcript, I can see.
Here's my theory on where this name comes from.
Yeah.
So my theory is that Hardison starts to, like, run out of names, or, like, it's hard for him to come up with aliases all the time. So he goes to an online name generator, but then he forgets and is using one that's also for D&D and accidentally selects the gnome or, like, the, I don't know, maybe not gnome. Maybe it's, like, goblin. Like, he selects the goblin name and it comes up with Gnar Slapdash. And he just, like, does everything. And then he's like, oh, shit. Like, I forgot that I needed to change that back to human for the new generation.
I love that.
That's my theory, because I don't know how else you get to gnar with the N being mostly silent. Like,
it's, and I wasn't even, right? I wasn't even hearing him say an N at all. So I'm like, what N are you talking about? I was just hearing gar. Like, no, gnar.
It's there a little bit on one of the times he says it, but yeah. But then I was like, is it slab dash? Slap dash?
Slab with a B. Dash. Slab dash.
Such a name.
Amazing. And it's just so good because he's like, oh, I'm Gar Slabdash, obviously. And he tells him that he's a food mover. And he's, you know, Lampard's like, okay, I need you to spell out what you're talking about. And he goes on to something about a smoothie. And he's like, you're not very good at spelling. So, you know, he's basically like skirting around the fact that he likes to deal in certain foods that restaurants find valuable. And Lampard's not playing along. So he's like, okay, I'm going to cut to the chase. I'm looking to move truffles, black winter truffles, and wants to move them fast and quick. So he's saying that he has a line on them that aren't from France. And then he just like walks out. Mm-hmm. Because he's leaving a little truffled breadcrumbs behind him.
Power move from Nate. Bit of a risk, but it's always better when the marks pursue them.
Exactly. Because it makes them think it's their idea.
Yeah.
And then we go back to the brew pub where Elliot is like, okay, I'm going to teach Parker how to like things. So he like brings her a plate of food and she's like, okay, it's just food. Like, it's just, cause like definitely except for candy, Parker just sees food as fuel, right? Like, she doesn't care. Yeah. It could be Soylent Green. And she's like, whatever.
Well, it's a little inconsistent how Parker treats food throughout the series, but she seems to enjoy it when things taste good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she has feelings about how things taste, but she doesn't have, it doesn't ever like evoke anything beyond that.
Yeah. And I did not come at this the right way, but like, Nate says it earlier, like, food is Elliot's passion. Like, this is, and he goes into this, he's like, this is my art. So when I look at this, I see art. When I'm in the kitchen, I'm creating something out of nothing and it makes me feel things. And then I, you know, sometimes it's good, sometimes it's not, but it makes me feel something. And then I can share that with people and that's giving them a window into how I feel. And that's art and that's important.
But I feel like Parker just started feeling things like 2 years ago, so the idea of then sharing those feelings is not a place she's really gotten to yet.
Yeah. And I do like he says, you know, she's trying, she's like, feel what? And he's like, just feel. And she's like, oh, okay. And he says, I didn't feel anything for a long time. So it's almost like he's like, you know, it might not come to you all at once, it's something mm-hmm. you have to work on. And Toby taught him how to cook. And then after that, he started to feel stuff again. And that's why he likes to share it. And John Rogers has said that that's like something he feels really strongly about, that when you make art, you're like letting people see inside of you and like sharing that with people just for a second. And that's beautiful. I like that. I love this next scene where they go out to some land and Sophie's there as this like crunchy Welsh hippie woman.
Yeah.
Or Cornish or whatever this accent is. It's so good. Rebecca Wambach.
It's, which is also a great name and very evocative.
And she, this is her land and she has a lot of it and there are truffles growing on this land.
She's going to give them to the co-op.
Yes, because she believes in all this stuff for locals and open source food. And I just want like the full story on this character. because I find her fascinating.
Well, and Nate's like, we're going to, maybe she'll sell a few, open another bookstore.
Yes. To make, you know, a little joke on Powell's. Yeah, and so Lampard's like, this is your modern world, ripping off a hippie chick. but
and he's just real weird. Like, Nate is getting weird with this character.
He's really leaning into that strangeness. But, and the, like, the bit of the end is mostly silent. Like, you can tell this character has had to say this his entire life. but he claims that there are truffles growing on all 16,000 acres that she has. And he even has, like, a whole bit about his squash teacher.
Yeah, it's this, like, weird metaphor about, like, my squash teacher always told me, don't, if you have to reach for the ball, don't dip it or something.
And if you're going, like, to play with the broken racket, take care to lob your
and
shots.
He's like, so are you in? And Nate's like, no, I'm not in. You have to pay me fair market value for these truffles. Because he's trying to offer isn't the obvious they were worth.
Yeah. And
so deal for, like, what, 20 pounds of truffles for $40,000 or something?
Exactly. And he's like, I want them in 3 hours. So he wants him to, like, does he think that they're already, like, harvested? But I guess he does, because he has to get them. And Toby only manages to find 16 pounds.
That he gets that from a former student.
Yeah, in Seattle. And so he has to take the truffles off his own menu. But Sophie's like, he'll get them back with interest. And they used a real truffle for one scene. I don't remember which scene it was, but the rest of the truffles, like the one that Sophie's holding, they're small potatoes that are just colored black. So they look like truffles, which is fine because we can't smell them. We don't know.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what I thought they were. But yeah, that tracks.
Yeah, I mean, they're the size, kind of shape.
It is weird to me that they say, oh, he'll get them back with interest, because at the end of the episode, they don't get all of the truffles back, right? Like, he keeps, or maybe they take back some truffles and leave Lombard with some.
Oh, don't they all get, spoilers, confiscated at the end?
Yeah, that's what I wasn't sure of. Like, does he take all of them? Or maybe they take back the, like, 16 pounds? Or maybe they're just like, we're not giving you truffles back, but here's a bunch of money. Like, here's what they're worth plus a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, but I don't know. Maybe. That's what I would have done.
Yeah.
I don't think that, I mean, that's going to suck that he's not going to have access to truffles for a while. His menu, but
maybe you can just buy more on the black market from the French guy.
Go to France and get him some real stuff.
Yeah.
So they tell Toby, once Lampard buys these from us, we'll track where he keeps his French truffles and his cash. And then so I guess we're gonna do a switch at that point. Because maybe he's taking his French truffles with him. I don't know.
Yeah.
So we'll go through. Maybe we'll figure it out as we go. And, you know, Nate asks Sophie if her students are ready. And she's like, oh, Tony worthy. And he's like, I hope it's grifter worthy. Because we know, we don't believe that stage acting is as good as grifter acting. And Hardison's checking on the camera, which is operational. So wherever he hides the truffles, they're going to be able to see it. But so they're getting ready to start. Elliot wants to warn everybody that he doesn't trust Lampard or Rampone. For some reason, their names are very similar to me. It's like the A's and the M's.
I really am struggling
with the T's.
Track of who's who.
Yeah, the AMPs in the middle of these names are very similar. So they are buying the truffles off him in this parking garage, which is much more in keeping with the aesthetic that Lampard wants.
Yep.
And there's a great like moment where it goes to commercial and he's like, this isn't 20 pounds.
Well, and it isn't. We know it's only 16 pounds.
Yeah. And we're like, oh crap. But he's like, my arm's as good as any scale. And I was like, that's so bullshit. Like, what? Somebody's supposed to believe you when you say that without you proving it? And he's like, oh, it's off by an eighth of a pound. And he's like, oh, you got me.
Just making him the biggest D-bag of like.
Right?
Well, and yeah, I also, anyone who claims that like they can just pick something up and know how much it weighs, I'm like, clearly you have never like tried to check a bag.
Right.
Where you pick up a suitcase and you're like, this definitely weighs less than 50 pounds. And then you put it on the thing and they're like, lady, this is 68 pounds. And you're like,
dang it, I'm just so strong.
And I put on 18 pounds of clothes and wear them on the airplane.
Right? Oh. So he, you know, they give Nate the cash. And then, oh, sorry, he invites him to the opening night of the restaurant. And Nate says, oh, well, I was going to have dinner with Mrs. Wambach. And he's like, well, bring her along. It'll be, you'll get the friends and family discount and you can have truffles. And I just love that he's like, it's going to be our signature black truffle dish, when he has not spoken with Elliot at all about his menu and told him he didn't care.
He thinks you're going to like shave black truffle on whatever is being served.
Yeah.
It is weird because he does later, it seems like he really cares what sort of reviews they get and like how good the food is. So
yes, he seems very invested later. It's bizarre. When he's literally never heard of Elliot before, he doesn't know what his food tastes like. He's a strange man. Just wants to be famous. So back at the headquarters, they realize that they're gonna do the switch or steal the truffles when Lampard is distracted the next night during the opening night of the restaurant. And I guess the only reason he's really invested in it is because he finds out that a food critic is going to come.
Yeah.
And they did that on purpose to distract him from the theft. But you know, Hardison's like, you know, Sophie can't do it because she already burned her ID as the hippie. And also you're taking her to dinner at this restaurant.
Right.
And Elliot, instead of like, usually it's Sophie who says, oh, well, Parker can do it. Or, you know, has confidence that somebody else can do it. But this time Elliot says Parker can do it. And Parker's yeah, like,
very, very sure of it. He's like, no, Parker, Parker can do it.
Yeah, she's got it. I had one conversation with her about food. We got it.
It's fine. Yeah.
And she's like, oh, she says the only things I like are chocolate and donuts. Which we've seen her love both of those things. And I like that they, you know, we've seen her eat voodoo donuts and we've saw her at the chocolate festival. And so they're like, okay, she's going to be the foodie queen, which, and this is all real. A lot of food critics go in disguise and nobody knows what they look like, and there are like police sketches of them so you can try to recognize them. So she's gonna wear this black wig and have a recognizable weird birthmark on her wrist to be identified by.
I wasn't sure here, is this the sort of thing where like, does the foodie queen actually exist already, or did Hardison create her suddenly? Because I know she was like the chocolate whisperer. He made, when Sophie was the person, he made her up out of.
Yeah. No, I think that they imply that this character is real in this universe.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. But then the other shoe drops for Hardison. He's like, wait a minute, Parker's on the floor and Elliot's in the kitchen. Who's gonna crack the safe? Like, who's gonna steal the stuff? And Nate's like, funny you should ask.
And Hardison's like, no, I have my laser.
My molecular gastronomy. And they're like, yeah, we let you play with that so that you would do this later. You can deal with your laser later. I got a laser. But then Nate's like, do you hear that? Because there's like loud, angry noises coming from the pub. And he goes out and Zachary and this other woman are like having this soap opera level fight in the brew pub with Sophie just sitting next to them, like just loving it. And they're practicing arguing. And she says like some storyline that's straight out of Moira Rose's Sunset Bay.
Oh yeah. It's like she thinks he's sleeping with her sister-in-law, but actually he's in love with her brother.
Who works as a longshoreman on the same docks where Kitty Dukakis once slept a drag queen in a fit of. And Nate's like, what are we doing here?
Yeah. He doesn't really seem upset. He's just like, do I need to care about this?
He's like, I'm confused. Yeah. Do you need me for this? And, you know, she wants him to know that the core of good acting comes from the persistence of tectonics.
What? I meant to Google that. And
I was like tectonic plates. So it's the things that are, because, you know, this is like the core, the backgrounds and the motivation of your character. So it's all the stuff shifting underneath what you're actually doing. So it makes sense to me. But then she's like, okay, ignore him. And he's like, he says no idea what that means. Very concerned that you do. But then she's like, remember the time that we did it in sign language? Now, this time you're blind. It's just good. And now we are in the opening night of the restaurant. We're in the restaurant's kitchen and Elliot's telling everyone, okay, you made it to varsity. And he's giving everybody their roles that night in the kitchen. And Hardison's supposed to be in charge of supplies, but he's just standing there eating a baguette.
Uh-huh. Like with his laser.
He's just pouting.
I would have a lot more sympathy for him if he didn't own a restaurant.
Yeah.
Like, I get that he wants to play with these toys that maybe he didn't know existed, but now he knows, and as we have seen, can buy them. And he owns a kitchen. Like, he could suck it up, do the con, and be playing with a laser in the comfort of his own home in, like, an hour.
Yeah. But he's being a child. I, too, would be eating a baguette, though. TBH.
Mm-hmm. I'd have it hanging out of my mouth like a cigar while I went and got supplies.
Exactly. And Parker shows up, and Lampard has given Rampone this sketch of the foodie queen, and Rampone's like, okay, I think he like recognizes her, right? So he sends Rampard to like look around for her, and then Nate and Sophie show up and he assures her that they have vegan choices that are ethically sourced and organically local and organically grown. And he's like, sure, whatever.
I don't know for sure. I really feel like this is a shout out to Portlandia. I have not watched all of Portlandia, but I do remember that there's the episode where they go to eat and they're very concerned about like, how ethical is this chicken? And then they end up going to the chicken farm and like working there.
And they, like, become part of a cult.
Right. And then they decide, like, okay, we can go back and eat that chicken. And that's very, like, it had that vibe of...
Yeah. Yeah. And, I mean, they've said before, like, Fred Armisen's a big fan of Leverage. And he was going to be in the first episode of the season. But they couldn't get their schedules to work.
Wait, was he going to be Carrie Elwes's part?
No, he was just going to have a little cameo where he was going to like do some very Portlandia kind of thing in the background. It was going to be the scene where Sophie's asking Parker like why she's okay with them being in Portland.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, yeah. So Rampone comes back up and he's like, the critic is here. She's here. I saw her. She looks like that. She has a birthmark on her wrist. And so Lampard's like, okay, I am going to serve her. And so nobody serves her but me. And the waiter says, si, senor.
Waiter does not care.
Sure, whatever. I better still get the tip, though. And Parker gets to act weird, which she's very good on. Meanwhile, if we thought we were just going to have to contend with Lampard and Rampone, I want to call him Rampard, Lampone. Oh no, now that I've said that out loud, I'm going to mess it up every time. If we thought those guys were the only people that we had to worry about, we would be wrong because Jean-Luc is back.
Well, it's Nate's fault. He's the one who's sitting there who's like, as long as nothing unexpected happens, we should be in the clear. Like, are you new? Don't say that.
Right? I feel like I'm in Scream. Like, you know, don't go upstairs. Never say I'll be right back. Yeah, so Jean-Luc is outside. He has somehow found out that Lampard is cutting him out. And he has decided that he, in turn, will take Lampard's most precious commodity, which is the chef.
Chef. I want to take chef.
He's taking my truffles. I will take your chef. So let's pretend I didn't try to do a French accent there. Just don't talk about it. Lampard comes by with some food for Parker. And so Sophie's trying to coach her on using micro expressions. And she tells her to give a hint of a smile. But Parker like gives this Joker-esque grin. And Sophie's like, micro, micro. And she doesn't like it. And it's just her trying to coach her is not working.
Because she's like, now you have to not like it a little. Think of jazz. And she like spits it out. Well, and then, okay, now I can't remember any of their names. And then Steve Valentine comes over and is like to take it away. But he also like brings over a plate and is just like holding a plate the way that like I would bring you a plate. Like it's not on a tray or anything, which I feel like is not, that'd be like weird at a fine dining establishment if they're like, here is this one little plate that I'm just like holding in my hand.
Yeah. Like it's not like a huge entree plate when then that you're like, okay, one of those, but a small, because he brings you like the spring rolls, right?
Yeah, and then he like picks up the thing she spat out. I think it's intentional that he's not a good waiter. Like he doesn't know what he's doing, but he won't let anyone else do it either.
Yeah. Oh, I do like Sophie. Like she's like, Parker, this time when you take a bite, think of the first time you stole something, and then she gives this like happy little smile, and then she tells her to think of jazz, and she spits up. But in a minute, the way that Elliot talks with her about things is really, really cool. But right now he's dealing with chaos in the kitchen and Hope is like, I'm out of these purple tomatoes. And he's like, they're red onions, Hope.
He's like, Hardison, get us more red onions. And Hardison's just eating a bell pepper like it's an apple, which I hate bell peppers.
That's so right, you do.
Like, a lot. Do people eat bell peppers like apples? That's my question.
Not regularly, but if you didn't have a knife to hand, you could. But normally you want to cut out the core where the stem is, because that's where all the seeds are, because you don't want to eat the seeds.
But also, people just snack on a bell pepper, like, not in anything, or, like, in something.
Yeah, you can. You just, like, I mean, if I'm slicing one up for cooking or before I even get the hummus out, I'll eat it plain.
It just seems so weird to me because I'm trying to imagine someone like getting ready for school and like being like, "Do I want the apple? No. The banana? No. Oh, I'll just throw a bell pepper in my bag."
Like, no, I think I do think they chose that for the like, is he eating a bell pepper? Okay. Like moment of it. It's not a normal thing. I'm sure there are people out there who do eat them like that. But it is not, it is by far not the norm. But yeah, I think it was just like a funny thing. Like what silly thing can he come from the back and be eating?
But yeah, so it's crazy. Everything's busy. Oh, and then the goons come in.
Yes, we start we start this, and the guy's like, I'm gonna beat you up, and he like hits him in the face with a frying pan or like a pan, which is the second time that's happened on this show.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of kitchen fights on this show.
I love a kitchen fight, and they're saying that it's the best when you have that comedy with a fight. The hilarious element here is that he's doing beating them up, and then he's like, order up, like runners.
Yeah, Elliot does not miss a beat about, like, actually, he is far more concerned about getting the food out than the fact that this guy, he's like totally nonchalantly just like beats the crap out of this French goon, just like, it's fine. And all of the people cooking, all of his students are just like, chef is beating up a guy, like, well, I better not burn these steaks, like, he is right? Scarier than this goon.
Yes.
And then the third goon finally comes in, and Elliot gives him, he's like making a sauce, and the goon comes up, and Elliot's like, here, taste this, and the goon tastes it, he's like, that's really good, he's like, it's good, it's not, I don't know what he asks, like, it's not too salty, or it doesn't need more, there's not too much
cumin. Yeah, there's a little more in there. There's some other stuff before that happens, but what is it he says? Not too much ginger. And he's like,
That's it. He's like, no, it's great. And Elliot's like, fantastic. And then like knocks him out.
It's just a fun bit because it is three times. So that's like that magic number. Mm-hmm. If you want three things like that. And you also get like Jean-Luc back in the car, like, what is so hard about this? It's just a chef. Don't be afraid. Just go get him. Elliot sends Hardison to get more supplies, which is the code for I need you to go steal the stuff from the safe, the truffles. But as he walks out, Rampone is standing in the hallway, like right at the entrance to where he would need to go. So they have to figure out a plan B. And Nate's like, actually, that was plan B. But Nate always has like all the way to plan W. Yeah. So I don't know what this is going on. But so Parker needs to get Hardison inside without tipping off Lampard. So she pulls out her little recorder and starts speaking in code and telling him that he needs to, you know, figure out another way in, like the air ducts, his favorite place, full of dust mites.
Well, she's like, the salsa verde tastes good and sneaks... Or some, yeah, like sneaks up on you.
See, spring rolls sneak up on you. The flavors
can passage in the back else. Of your palate.
Yeah. And then, like, it's like several layers of things happening. Like, she's talking about the food, but it's also telling Hardison what he needs to do. And then Elliot's like, how is the food making you feel, Parker? Let's dive into this now. And... you know, she's like, it's a nice, the salsa verde is a nice marriage with the spring rolls. But while totally yummy, I feel like I should be getting something more. And he's like, oh, like it gives him this like eureka moment. He's like, bone broth. We're going to put bone broth in the salsa
verde. No, bone marrow. We're going to add bone marrow.
There we go. And Hope's like, oh, so gross. And he says it's going to give it the consistency that it's lacking. No salsa verde flies out of this kitchen without bone marrow. And Hardison has climbed through the air duct, and now he is in, crawling through food, and he warns nobody to get the spinach, by the way.
Because he just crawled over it.
Yeah, he just has his like hands in it, feet in it. Oh, and I love Parker's like, I can taste garlic and mushrooms. And something else that makes me feel different. And Hardison's like, is that code? I don't understand.
Is that for me?
She's like, no, it's the food. I get it. I feel something. And this is when Jean-Luc is like angry. He's like, what is going on in there? Like, go get me the chef. I love that we also get the names of the henchmen. Their names are Patrice, Samir, and Thierry.
Oh, normally they don't get names. That's nice. Yeah,
that's lovely. Parker is, oh, let's see. Hardison gets to cook with liquid nitrogen. He gets to pump some nitrogen through this coil and
he like blows the safe open.
Yeah, it's really cool. And Parker really likes these black noodles. She's scarfing them up. Taglioni nero con gamberi. She's like, they're really good.
Squid ink noodles.
Then yes. Artisan's like, I can make blue spaghetti. Or I can blow a safe.
Well, and all the money is in there. Like, they were right. So he starts packaging up all the money, moves the truffles out. So that's where, so there's two bags of truffles.
Okay, there's, because he got more truffles from Jean-Luc than they gave him truffles. So that's the interest.
So maybe they left him the truffles he already had. And then they took back the ones for, maybe they left him Jean-Luc's truffles and they took back the student in Seattle's truffles.
No, because I think he bought more truffles from Jean-Luc than he did from them, because they only gave him 16 of the 20 pounds that he thought he was buying from them. And I think he did buy 20 pounds from Jean-Luc, because then that would give them the extra
interest. Okay, yeah, right? So they could have taken Jean-Luc's and left the other 16.
Yeah.
Okay. But so he packs everything up, and then Rampone comes in and catches Hardison in the act.
Mm-hmm. And they added a little fun flourish of a fight, and Hardison fights him.
Just doing all the jobs.
This is a best run episode.
Like, he's going to be the thief. He's going to be the hitter.
He's going to be the biter.
Granted, I have been watching a lot of Teen Wolf.
True.
But I feel like if someone's trying to kill you, biting them is probably a good choice.
I mean, the human mouth is disgusting. So
yeah. And also it's a good way to be like, that is the person who attacked me. And they'll be like, how do you know? And you'll be like, well, there's a bite mark that matches my teeth on their forearm.
Yeah. Yeah. So he pushes, he bites Rampone and then he pushes him off and then he runs for the door and he lets Nate know that he's coming in hot. And then Sophie is on and she stands up and she's like, I think we should all like stand up and give a thank you to David Lampard. And we should, you know what tree hugging is? Let's try hugging a chef. And then everybody gets up and starts hugging each other and hugging him.
I tell you what, watching it in late 2020, that scene hits differently. It's horror show watching it now.
Yeah. No, it's awful. Like, so many things are right now. When you watch them, you're just like, why are you so close to that person?
But just like hugging, the idea of hugging a stranger right now is like,
yeah,
gag inducing. Like, no, I no.
Yeah. Well, so.
But yeah, so that scene really hit differently of like hugging a
strangers.
Yeah. Which I think would be like weird and uncomfortable if someone at a restaurant was suddenly like, let's all hug. I realize that they're all plants.
Yeah.
And they knew it was coming, but like if they weren't, it would be weird to be like, hug the chef. I'd be like, strange, but
all right, fine. That's never been a thing. I don't understand. But I mean, maybe if it was like weird hippie, like British lady was saying it, you're like, well.
Yeah. But right now,
I think I'm just sitting and watch. But
this is a cult and I have to leave.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just here to eat squid ink noodles. Thanks. Mm-hmm. Bye. So everyone's hugging and Lampard's like also like us, not into it. And Hardison comes running through, pushing his way through, followed by Rampone. And Lampard's like, my goodness. And Rampone tries to run through, but then our good buddy Zachary grabs him in a big old hug. And he like runs away, like runs after Hardison. And Lampard finally is like, wait a minute, something is up. And he starts making his way through all the diners. And Jean-Luc is like watching all this stuff from outside. And he's like, I'm out of here. He just leaves. He's like, I don't know. These weird Americans are hugging. I'm going.
I'll see you later.
And Sophie asks, like, isn't he going to grab the truffles and run? And Nate says, I hope so. So Hardison has run back through the restaurant kitchen. I don't really understand the layout of this whole situation, but
no,
I guess the school is where the safe is, and he had to go into the school, and the restaurant is attached to the school. And then he goes back through the kitchen. But Hardison comes running through, and Rampone stops, and he recognizes Elliot. And I guess now we really should talk about the guy who's playing Rampone. His name is Marshall Teague, and he is a very prolific stunt artist. Stunt actor. Yeah, he was in...
Can I just point out Marshall Teague is also a great name and would have been a great villain name, and they should have just named them Marshall Teague and Steve Ballantyne, and that would have been much easier.
Right? He's in Roadhouse. Yeah.
I've never seen Roadhouse, and I've always kind of wanted to.
Yeah. Oh. You can see him much younger.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, he's been in a ton of stuff. So he is very, like, this is them fighting. And actually because they are about to do a knife fight. When Christian Kane read the script and saw that there was a knife fight scheduled for it, he just called up John Rogers and was like, Marshall Teague's on the plane. Like, he's on his way. He's going to do this part. Like, don't worry about casting it. And they were like, oh, okay. Okay. So Rampone, you know, says like, oh, you know, the whole hippie routine threw me for a minute, but now I recognize you. And Elliot is like, okay, everybody get out of here. But he's also like, earlier Whitney got something right and he praised her. And she was like, she was so flustered that she was being praised by him that she like forgot to plate the thing. And
which was like, something that'd be perfect. And she was just going to like send the frying pan out.
So funny. But then Hope's leaving and he tells her that she did a good job too. Like, he just like takes a moment. He's like, I'm about to knife fight this man, but I want you to know that you did a good job tonight, Hope.
I really liked, well, actually, this episode is very light on the flashbacks. I think the only flashback might be to that gluing things on the plate scene. I don't think there's any others. And I noticed it because they did the really nice thing where when Rampone and Elliot are in the freezer together at the beginning, Elliot is keeping his back to him, and it's a little bit weird, like it's noticeable, but it could also just be like, oh, Elliot's being weird. And then later you find out that like, oh, this guy knows Elliot from back and just couldn't recognize him. And I was surprised that they didn't do the full flashback to that scene of where like he's trying not to show him. And I really liked that they didn't, because sometimes one of the episodes I was on for, oh, the one with Emma Caulfield, where they have a flashback to literally like 2 minutes earlier in the show. Mm. Like, there wasn't even a commercial break in between. And it's like, yeah, show, I get it. I was here for that. Like, I was drinking the same cup of water at that point still. And I liked that they didn't spoon feed that this time. No pun intended. They just... they left it up to the audience to like figure out what had been going on.
Yeah, that's true. I hadn't thought of that, but I really appreciate that as well. And I think the way that they shoot this knife fight in a second, I think is kind of a different technique than they usually do for fights.
Yeah.
Which I think is neat. Like they like slow down some parts of it, and it's a pretty brutal fight because there is a point, like there's no point in us like going through blow by blow of this fight because that doesn't work as well in audio, but
he gives him a ha and a hi-ya and then a wah-ha and then I kick her, sir.
Yeah, but there is a point where it is unclear whether Elliot would follow through and kill this guy or not.
Yeah, well, the guy like cuts Elliot, gives him a bad his forearm, and Elliot keeps like looking at it throughout the fight, like he's clearly worried about this cut. And then like he gets the best of Rampone and is like maybe gonna kill him. Mm-hmm. He's like, you hurt my friend.
And originally they were gonna have it where he was Toby was hurt even more and or dead. And they thought, you know what? The rest of this episode has a lighter tone. Maybe we shouldn't murder someone in the first bit.
That makes sense. I do see how you could set that first scene with Toby and Elliot and Nate in a hospital. Mm-hmm. Like, you could have him in a hospital bed and that scene would play the same.
Yeah.
Of, like, the two of them and then, like, can I have a word with you? That would, you know. Yeah. Well, when I watched the episode twice today, and the first time I watched it, when he's like, you hurt my friend, I'm like, Hardison didn't look that hurt. Like, he's running out after he bit him. I was like, oh, right, no. The client.
No, from the beginning, yeah.
I thought that Elliot was ready to, like, kill this guy because he had, like, threatened Hardison.
I mean,
you can't kill everyone who threatens Hardison.
Yeah.
You can't.
And he says, you and Lampard ruined my friend Toby's life, which I think is a holdover from them before they decided not to, like,
yeah,
completely ruin his life, you know, because he's like, my body will heal. But he says, and he ruins the lives of the kids that he was trying to help. But, and that's, like, right when he's, like, very much struggling with it. And Nate walks up and tells him it's not worth it. We're going to give him to the cops.
But, like, Nate isn't that, he doesn't, like, do a full, like, hostage situation, talk him off the ledge. He's just like, Elliot, it's not worth it.
Yeah.
But, like, you do get the vibe that if Elliot had decided to kill him anyways, Nate would be like, okay.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Nate is like, you don't want to kill people anymore, so I will support you in that. It doesn't really seem like Nate is like, we don't kill people as a group.
Exactly. He's just like, I want to remind you of your preferences. Like, I don't care either way. I just killed two men at the end of the last season. Like, I do not care.
Oh, shoot. I meant to send you, someone on Tumblr did a thing about The Last Damn Job, about how actually Nate did plan on killing the two guys. And, like,
I think I saw that
his plan actually went perfectly. Like, he set up that the team would see him with a gun, and then, like, so that they would see him decide not to kill these men, and, like, the team would think he'd done the right thing. And, like, yes. And I read it and was just like, that is dark and I love it.
I know. Oh my God, we must follow the same people. I read that and I was like, that's exactly what happened.
Oh, Nate murdered that guy. Those guys, yeah. So I feel like Nate's problem with Elliot killing Rampone would probably be something along the lines of, like, this is going to be hard for us to cover up.
Yeah.
Like, you couldn't have waited and just, like, killed him tomorrow.
Yeah. Well, and, like, even though Nate doesn't care about maybe murdering someone he thinks is... Mm-hmm. should be dead, like, he knows that Elliot's like, I'm not down with that anymore. I don't do that.
Yeah.
So, but I do love also that, well, I don't love, but Rampones calls him a dog. He's like, call off your dog. He's crazy. And Elliot's like, oh, you think I'm crazy? I'm going to cut your freaking head off and serve it on a platter.
Yeah. And then Nate asks him about it. He's like, cut off his head, and Elliot's like, was that too far? I thought maybe it was too far.
And he's like, no, actually, I liked it. But the next scene is my favorite scene, because Lampard is on the, what is that thing that connects the
concourse? No. Jetway?
Yes, the jetway that connects the plane.
It's been so long since I've been on a plane.
My God, can you imagine being on an airplane? And he's stopped, and I love using that thing that we just said, jetway, is such a great thing, because they couldn't, it was just this, like, it's a perfect little set, like, and you, everyone knows what that looks like, and it's a big tube, and you know, just build it. But he's stopped by these two agents, Agent Palmer and Agent Sneed. And he's like, oh, DEA? And he's like the golfers, only we're not golfers.
Also, Agent Sneed, the one who does most of the talking, is like a golden retriever in human form. Like, just the cutest little cinnamon roll of...
But very serious about her job.
Yeah, maybe like a Cocker Spaniel in human form. Like, she's got these, like, blonde ringlets, and she's itty-bitty and, like, very, like, deadly serious about, like, we're gonna need to look in your bags.
And, yeah, and he thinks that they're DEA, and they're... they're actually U.S. Fish and Wildlife.
Well, because he's like, oh yeah, no drugs here. And they open up the thing and they take out a truffle. And he's like, oh, it's a charcoal briquette. I love my barbecue. And they're like, this is a French truffle. And he's like, well, I'm a chef. And they're just like, no.
No, no, you're going to go to jail.
They are endangered species. And her partner has like a mullet.
And I just kept thinking of him as the guy from Parks and Rec, from the Animal Control Center or department. Rest in peace, he passed away. But just like the super stoned guy.
Oh, yeah. But these Fish and Wildlife people, because they're like, this is an endangered species. Like, you can't have this. And then they like tase him. They are so serious. And John Rogers said that like they kept getting diverted into like writing a spinoff show, and 1000% I would watch that show.
Oh yes.
Of like the tiny little agent who is like very serious about protecting fish and wildlife, and her like bemulleted partner. Like, that's the Bones I wish that show had been.
Yes, I know. I'm really, they mentioned that in the commentary, and I was like, why is this not real? I need it.
Bring them back in Leverage season 6, please. Please, yeah. And thank you.
And you know, I like that a lot of times, only once in one circumstance is, I'm thinking of Taggart McSweeten, where the Leverage team like gives them something and they're kind of bumbling on their own. But everybody else that they work with who's in law enforcement has been really good at their jobs. Yeah. So,
oh, also, I would ship the Fish and Wildlife agent with, I want to say McSweeten is the young FBI agent.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd ship that.
Oh my God, that'd be cute. Yep.
But then it pans down the jetway and the Leverage crew is there to do their like victory gloat, which means they like bought tickets to get through security. Like, they followed him to the airport. Yes. And then bought tickets just so they could, like, and I know that, like, Parker probably used her ticket then, but, like, the rest of them didn't, just so they could stand there and gloat.
Was
like,
Parker even there?
Oh, I don't know.
I think it was just the four of them.
Maybe it was.
I could be wrong, but.
Maybe she'd already gotten on her flight. Okay, so maybe they went to, like, I don't know. Well, no, because Elliot didn't know Parker had gone. But anyhow, yeah. I thought that was one of the more, I don't know, like,
ridiculous, and I loved it.
Yeah.
And as they leave, Elliot like pats a kid on the head and he is so pleased, and that was like the cousin of somebody on set or something. Oh, okay. Yeah,
I do like that Elliot is just one of those guys, the kids who are like, hi.
You're cool. Like, I don't know that you can kill people at the drop of a hat, or that you can play the guitar, or that you can cook, but you just exude cool. Okay. Last scene. We get Elliot giving Toby the money. And I like, he's like, I've got my students back and my reputation back. And now he's going to be able to keep the doors open for a while. And Elliot's like, oh, don't you worry. As long as we're around, those doors will stay open.
Well, like, what else is Elliot spending his money on?
Right?
Like, Parker. There's Parker scene.
Well, we have one last Hardison refuses to tip the...
Yeah.
And even Nate's, like,
tip, I forgot.
Man.
I blocked it out.
Yeah, we just won't talk about it. It's horrible. And it's just because the writer's room was talking about how you should tip. And I really don't believe that Hardison, like a young Black man, would not tip people that he sees working hard. Like,
no. Especially because Hardison's so generous.
And empathetic. Like, come on.
Well, and like, there's later in the
Broken Wing job where you meet the waitress when Parker has a broken leg and the waitress is like helping out. She talks about how Hardison's like the best boss ever.
Yeah.
And
it's yeah. And him getting distracted from Parker's issues earlier.
The way that I think it would have, here's how I would have rewritten it, is I would have had him be so distracted by his new toy that he just like pulls money out and like hands it to the guy. And it's like a crumpled up one in the beginning part. And Elliot's like really upset about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on he does it again. And it's like a crumpled up 50 this time. And he treats it this way of like, ooh, I got a laser. Like, okay, man, here's your tip. I got to go.
Yeah.
And then, and that's what, and then the bike messenger is like, it's fine that I got the one earlier, like, because this happens too. Like, sometimes it's 50. Like, he doesn't.
See, I like that a lot. I like that a lot more. Or if, like, he'd brought him the thing and it was dinged this time.
Oh, yeah, that would have been good.
Yeah.
If he just, like, licked it before he handed it to him. Now, hire us to nitpick your scripts. We'll pick all the nits.
Exactly. And then finally we do have the where's Parker? Like Elliot's like, where is Parker? And Nate tells him that she's on a little trip, and then we see her lower herself on the rig and she's like looking at a statue in a museum, and she smiles.
It's a miniature of Rodin's The Thinker. So I tried to figure out which museum it is, and it's that's not clear because a lot of places have them because there were a lot of like models because it's just cast bronze off of the miniature. But the way, so it's a really sweet scene of her like appreciating art for art's sake, but because of the way it's framed with like her in the background and Rodin in the front, and she looks at it and smiles, she is staring directly at its butt crack.
Which I think she would also be like, hey.
Which, I mean, look, that's literally what we did when we went to the National Gallery. I have like a bunch of pictures of us in front of art and then a bunch of pictures of butts. Of I was like, I'm going to take a picture.
Because it's never not funny. Yeah.
Always, always hilarious to look at the butts on the statues. But yeah, I did think, I was like, what a sweet scene. Hold on a sec.
Parker is us. One of us.
One of us. Yeah.
It's so true. Okay. Any last thoughts on this episode? We've had a lot of thoughts.
We've had a lot of thoughts.
Both about and not about this episode.
Okay, wait. So two things real quick. If you felt like you did not get enough time of Steve Valentine being an evil chef, I recommend that you watch the Supernatural episode, Dog Dean Afternoon, which is season 9, episode 5. In which he plays an evil chef because like people are dying. The only witness to the crime is a dog. So Dean does a spell to be able to talk to a dog. Supernatural's a trip, y'all. It's weird by season 9. And they discover that he is eating weird animal parts to get their powers through some like ritual. And he tears Sam's throat out, but Sam is inhabited by an angel and heals. So then Steve Valentine, who is named Leo in that, just like little vernal
equinox
Leo, is like, well, I'm just gonna eat Sam. So then he and Dean have a whole fight and he gets mauled to death by a pack of dogs, but he plays essentially the same character. And it came out like a year after the Leverage episode, so I mean, I don't know if they like did that intentionally or if Steve Valentine's agent was like, well, remember that job last year? Like, do you want to just do it again?
Because I saw that the chef's whites. Okay.
Right. Like maybe they were just like, oh, we need a chef. Well, shit. Wait, Steve can do it. It's just, but like they don't film in the same place. I don't know. It's just
not too far though. Like Vancouver is not that far from Portland.
That's true. Yeah. All right. So it's and there's a fair amount of crossover, I think, between the actors who are on different, like just sort of day player or guest stars. Yeah.
Anyhow, Steve Valentine, evil chef, also in Dog Dean Afternoon. Not one of the better Supernatural episodes, but kind of the same thing. There's also an Atlantic article, and I can send it to you if you want to put it in the show notes, that's like the dark side of the truffle trade, and it does a nice job of breaking down like some of the problems with truffles in terms of people stealing truffles off of other people's land, or stealing truffle dogs. Like, if so, you know, my neighbor has a good truffle dog, so I'm gonna steal it. And people like leaving their good truffle hunting spots, they're like deathbed secrets that they pass on to their children. And apparently in France, it's such a problem, people not paying taxes on selling their truffles, that they made a special rule that the buyers of the truffles can pay the taxes. So they had to make special rules about it. And in that, they have a quote from a Time article where this reporter describes the scent of a truffle as a combination of newly plowed soil, fall rain, burrowing earthworms, and the pungent memory of lost youth and old love affairs.
Oh, wow.
So.
Have I never smelled a truffle? I guess I mean, not.
It smells like dirt. Do you know that a lot of the stuff you get that's like truffled oil and stuff is not, that's not the same as like a fresh, real truffle.
Okay, that makes sense.
But yeah, that's, I don't, they just, they smell like dirt. So that's pretty much all I have.
I love it. So Leverage, to not a bunch of new stuff out, but Noah Wiley was interviewed for Entertainment Tonight, talking about the Leverage reboot and George Clooney and all sorts of stuff. So it's a pretty, like, it's mostly about him and his career, but also there's some pictures from behind the scenes, like of some sets and stuff. And I think, from the looks of it, one of them is of like Leverage headquarters, and it looks really neat. Like, okay. the set that they have for it. So I like it.
Yeah. There's still no premiere date announced, right? It's just.
Yeah, no. But they're all still there. So I think they're still filming.
Yeah, but I don't think this has a long turnaround. This isn't, it's not like it's an effects heavy show.
Right.
Something where you have to like wrap filming 8 months before.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure there's some time, and they maybe are doing more effects because of COVID to do like, maybe they're doing some more digital
background. Yeah, they're probably shooting double, you know, when to get double coverage, they can have people standing further away from each other, but looking closer.
Well, and I don't know if they bubbled up at some point.
I think I'm assuming they did, because I know that some of them had Thanksgiving dinner together. So I know that they're like eating around each other, but I love that in between scenes and stuff, they mask back up. And like when they're running lines before, like, cause there's also some footage of that. Like, obviously they're on set, but like the actors have like put masks back on in between things. Mm-hmm. Cause I don't think that they're filming the whole thing in masks.
No, probably not. Well, and yeah, I don't think they're doing the full pod thing, but it would make sense that like you pod up the main five actors sort of and say like, and then, oh, you're gonna have a guest in this, like, well, LeVar Burton's in this scene and he's not part of the pod, so everybody has to mask up except for well, I don't know, I want it to come out like perfectly when this podcast is closing up,
right? Wouldn't that be great? I do have some thoughts for if we do need filler episodes in between.
Okay.
So that'll be okay. I found there's a series that I think is on Acorn that I need to find, that's like The Art of the Heist. And I just got a movie called The Diamond Heist.
Nice.
And there's a few books that I'm like, oh. Robin, thank you so much for being on.
Thank you for talking to me for the last
11-5 hours.
Anytime, literally anytime. You don't really have social media for people to follow, so that's really cool. I appreciate that and your self-restraint. People can follow me on Twitter at LibrarianSD. I do not have any self-restraint. Everything's right there. And you won't see us again, but you'll hear us again in 2 weeks. Lisa and I are going to be talking about the Give Me a K Job. So that'll probably come out the week of Christmas.
All right. See, I have to tell you, you can cut this part or not. But I looked him up in IMDb because I was curious, and I'm definitely scrolling through. And I had the thought of like, oh, cool, he was on Leverage. I might be a little tired. Like,
that is so
of course gross. He was on Leverage. We're talking about it.
I'm going to put that at the very end.
Have a good night, everyone.